Well, today we are continuing our series called Holy Roads, looking at some of the different ways that human beings connect with God and reflect who God is as we live and serve. And today we will be looking at the way of compassion. But before we jump in, I just need to give you a little warning about an experience that most of you probably cannot relate to, which is preaching while pregnant. I'm finding that I get short of breath much more easily these days, so just a heads up that there might be some random pauses as we go through, and let's just see it as a chance to practice the way of stillness from a couple of weeks ago, and also a chance for me to catch my breath. So we'll see how it goes today, and thanks for bearing with me in that. The way of compassion is a way of connecting with God and living out our faith that is probably familiar to most of us. If we were asked to talk to someone else about what it means to care for others or to act like Jesus, I'm guessing that most of us might use the word compassion to explain those things. And our mission statement as a church is rooted in the call to love and care for others. And that mission statement is, say it with me, loving God and loving others, serving God through serving others. So this is central to what we have been called to be about as a community. But it's important to understand what the word compassion actually means, that it's not a surface-level niceness or sympathy or a way of caring that doesn't require much from us. The word compassion is made up of two parts, calm and passion, so it literally means to suffer with. And the Greek word that we see in the New Testament is a very fun word to say, splanknizomai. Everybody say that, splanknizomai. Say it again. Splanknizomai. Are you going to say it? Everybody say splanknizomai. Thank you. Okay. This word is used in the Gospels to describe the times when Jesus is moved with compassion. And it refers to the central part of the body, the entrails or the guts. And today we think about our hearts more so as the place where our deepest emotions come from. But in that time, people thought of their guts as the place where their most intense feelings of love or hate or grief or passion came from. So to be moved with compassion is to feel it in our gut. And then if we look at the Hebrew, we find the word rachamim, which refers to the womb of Yahweh. Isn't that amazing? Compassion is such a deep and mysterious experience that it can only come from God's womb. Let's just sit with that image for a moment. When we think of those who embody the way of compassion, we might think of someone like Mother Teresa, who spent her life serving the poorest of the poor, who sacrificed her own comfort and material well-being for the sake of those Jesus had called her to live among and love. And for Mother Teresa, her work always involved both joy and suffering. It was truly a sacrificial love that came from the deepest parts of herself. She said this, "True love is love that causes us pain, that hurts, and yet brings us joy. That is why we must pray to God and ask Him to give us the courage to love." And if we try to think about someone living the way of compassion today, someone that we know, and she'll kill me for saying this, but many of us would probably think of someone like Dawn Anderson, who gives of herself so generously, responds to so many needs, and treats those in our community who are vulnerable with kindness and dignity, offering tangible help and hope. And I'm sure Dawn and others of you would attest that there is a real cost to the way of compassion. It requires our full participation. Henry Nouwen wrote, "Compassion means full immersion in the condition of being human." I think a lot of times we just want to escape from the condition of being human or distract ourselves from it. But compassion is about embracing it, letting ourselves feel the depth of what another person is feeling without running away from it or minimizing it. I learned some valuable lessons about compassion from my time as a chaplaincy intern at San Francisco General Hospital during my junior year of college. It was a stretching experience for me being thrown into a totally new environment with so many types of suffering and crisis and grief in every room that I walked into. And in that setting, I had to suspend any expectations about what I could offer a patient or what they might need from me. The older seasoned chaplains at the hospital helped us interns to understand that sometimes the chaplain is the only member of the care team that patients are allowed to send out of the room. That with doctors and nurses coming into their rooms at all hours, doing things to them that are out of their control, that sometimes having the freedom to say no is what someone might need the most for their own sense of dignity and humanity. And so sometimes the best way that we could serve a patient was to knock on the door, to introduce ourselves, and to be told, please leave me alone. It was a hard and humbling lesson to learn, realizing that my ego and my desire to be useful was something I needed to set aside in order to truly serve another person. I had to learn how to offer my presence without expectations, to enter into each encounter with an openness to how God might ask me to bear witness to each unique person in their pain. And of course, if we want to see the kind of compassion that comes straight from the heart or from the womb of God, we look to the person of Jesus Christ. The Gospels give us so many powerful accounts of how Jesus offered himself to others, truly seeing their humanity and meeting the deepest needs of those in front of him. So let's read one of those stories together from Luke's Gospel, chapter 8, starting at verse 40. This story takes place in the thick of Jesus' ministry, when his reputation for healing and miracles is growing, and the crowds are pressing in on every side. The needs are many, and the demands for Jesus to respond to them are relentless. So Luke 8, verse 40. Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowd almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. But no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. So you can picture the scene. The crowds are in a frenzy when this very important man, a leader of the synagogue, comes before Jesus and falls at his feet, a very humbling posture for such a man. And he begs Jesus to come to his house because his daughter, his only daughter, is dying. So Jesus sets out. And you would think that the crowds might give him a little bit of space at this point, but they are still so close they almost crush him. They're so eager not to miss a thing he does. And in the midst of it all, someone comes and touches his cloak, a touch that is so different from the frenzied crush of the crowd. And at this point, Jesus could have just continued on his merry way. He was already in a rush. There was a very important man whose daughter was actively dying. He was very much needed elsewhere. How could he justify taking time for whoever had touched him in the crowd? And can you imagine what Jairus must have been thinking when Jesus stops on the road and he says this, verse 45. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." It's hard to tell from the way the story is written how much Jesus knew of this woman before she reveals herself to him. It's possible that he knew exactly who had touched him and was giving her an opportunity to step forward in faith and to show her courage. And what she did was indeed courageous. Her bleeding condition was embarrassing and debilitating, and it would have made her ritually unclean in the community, unable to function as a part of the social world. But somehow she makes it close enough to touch his clothes, but clearly hopes to just fade into the background. It's likely that she was hesitant to approach Jesus directly in fear of making him unclean too. And as Jesus looks at her, he sees both her vulnerability and her boldness, and he speaks to her with understanding and kindness. And who knows how long it had been since someone spoke to her in that way. He calls her daughter, and she's the only person in the Gospels that Jesus addresses with that tender term. And in doing so, Jesus is not only restoring her physically, which already happened the moment she touched his cloak, but he's also taking the time to restore her place in the community, to offer her dignity and show the crowds that she is worthy to be embraced and valued as one of their own. It's a powerful move. When Jesus shows compassion, it is always for the whole person, not just about physical healing. We'll pick up at verse 49. While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid, just believe, and she will be healed." When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She is not dead, but asleep." They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he told them not to tell anyone what had happened. At first, it seems as though Jesus' decision to stop on the road and pay attention to this woman has cost him the life of Jairus' daughter. And even though Jesus stays calm and tells him not to be afraid, I imagine that was nearly impossible for Jairus to do. It's incredible, almost maddening, how unrushed and present Jesus is, even in the face of a father who is desperate to save his daughter's life. But Jesus continues on in his non-anxious way and enters the scene of mourning with calm and clarity about his own purpose. And the result is healing and joy at what God can do. But it can feel like we are in a very different place. When we are faced with the urgent needs in front of us, when we are moved with compassion in the deepest parts of ourselves, it can be a very helpless feeling to know that we just cannot respond to all the needs around us. So how can we take our lead from Jesus in the way that we offer compassion to others? I want to talk about this in terms of some temptations that caregivers might face, some of the ways that offering compassion might get a little off track, even when our intentions are good. One temptation is to use the act of serving others to meet our own needs instead of the needs of the other person. This can happen so easily, and I've seen this tendency in myself many times. It shows up when I care more about how someone responds to my act of caregiving or how I feel afterwards than about the real impact of what I've done for them. When it becomes about my need to be needed, I know that I've gotten off track, and that I need to seek care and healing for myself in other places, before God and with loved ones in my life. Then I'm able to go back to the act of caring from a healthier place. It would have been easy for Jesus to respond to the urgency of the needs before him, with his ego puffed up from this important synagogue leader falling down and asking for his help, instead of staying present enough to take time for the woman on the road. So it's important for us to ask ourselves, what is my motivation in offering care in this situation? Whose needs are front and center here, mine or somebody else's? Another temptation related to the first one is to use the act of compassion as a distraction from whatever is going on in our lives that needs our attention. It can be tempting to just keep busy by doing good things instead of tending to the inner work that God is asking us to do. And because the way of compassion can be so demanding and involves our whole self, it can get messy for us and for others when we are acting out of a wounded place instead of a healed place. So we need to be careful and diligent about tending to our own hearts before God, letting God's Spirit do the work that only God can do in us. And in the Gospels, we see over and over that Jesus is intentional about taking time by himself, away from everyone, to tend to his relationship with God, to be centered and filled up before he enters back into the fray. It's so easy to get burned out or resentful or just exhausted when we are not taking the time we need to be renewed in God's presence. And the last temptation that I want to name is the tendency to keep compassion separate from the work of justice. The two are meant to go hand in hand. They're meant to be inseparable. The covenant paper on compassion, mercy, and justice that some of our small groups read this fall defines the words this way. Compassion is identifying with and joining in the suffering of others. It's a call to sacrificial love for others in the name of Jesus. And biblical justice is joining God in making things right. It's the work of God confronting and overcoming evil and sin, both individually and systemically in our world. So compassion asks the question, where is the brokenness in our world? And justice asks, why does this brokenness exist? And how do we address the root causes of that brokenness? So one without the other is incomplete. And our world is in desperate need of both compassion and justice more and more each day. It has been a dizzying couple of weeks in our news feeds. So many changes and so much uncertainty on a local and global scale. We are seeing real effects on real people, with the most vulnerable in our communities facing the greatest risks. So what will the church's response be? In times that feel unsteady, it's good to remember that what God requires of us as his people remains the same. We are to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with him, and to love our neighbors as ourselves. So will we have the courage to love, to suffer with our neighbors, even when it might cost us something? In these days, we need followers of Jesus who are wired for compassion, to use their gifts of sacrificial love and care that comes from the heart of God to show others that they are not alone. And we need Christ followers who are wired for justice, or the way of action that we talked about the first week, to walk hand in hand with the compassion people, to work together to find new pathways that get to the heart of the matter, so that we can stand in the gap for our sisters and brothers, the neighbors whom God loves. This is the hard work that God is calling us to be about in his kingdom. So as we close, is God's Spirit prompting you in any way as you think about the way of compassion in your life? Is there a next step that you feel God calling you to take in the ministries of care and compassion that we offer here at BCC? Maybe it's through the Closet of Hope or being part of our care team that reaches out to those on the margins of our church family. Or maybe you're feeling the nudge to learn more about the work that Arrive Ministries is doing with immigrants and refugees in our city, being part of offering care and compassion to those who are in desperate need of friendship and belonging and advocacy. In your bulletin, there are some questions that you can use for your own reflection with God this week. And let's ask God to reveal something new to each of us about his heart of compassion and how we can align our hearts with his. Pray with me. God of compassion, we thank you that you are a God who has put on flesh and blood in the person of Jesus, that you have walked among us and that you suffer with us as we live in all the extremes of what it means to be human. And we thank you for showing us what it looks like to walk with compassion in the world, not by frantically trying to solve everyone's problems, but by offering grace and presence where it is needed most. Teach us how to live this way. Teach us to see with your eyes and to respond to others from a place of knowing how deeply we are loved by you. Continue to push us to expand the limits of who we see as worthy of that same love. You are so good, God, and we are totally dependent on you for life and hope and growth. Form us into the people that you want us to be. We pray this in your name.